There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Russell.
And I'm Lars C. Watson.
On this edition, Napoli are back on track in Serie A, but can it last? Also, the new era of Barcelona. What is it and will it last? And last but not least, the goalkeeper or the rocket scientist. Who are you going to call? Talking of last, oh, sorry, Larsh. I'm just asking both of you if there is, before we get into the meat of our conversation today, any interesting thoughts and stories that have crossed your mind over the last week. And I know you've got something that will, you've been teasing us about all week, Lars, but then a Norwegian word.
I changed my mind. I was going to go niche. I thought for once I've gone too niche.
Anders, I'm calling you by your Scandinavian name now because of
Anders Brussel.
Exactly. Anders Brussel.
Anders Brussel.
I'm just going to fit in with you guys.
That would be the Swedish one. Anders Brussel.
Can I do my joke again?
I got it the first time.
I know you got it. Okay, but Lars missed it.
Did I not laugh enough?
No, never mind. It was a Beatles analogy.
I was going to go too niche, but no, listen, the serious thing is that Sebastian Allaire is back, which is great. Like, It's one of those, the Allaire thing is when our usual footballing vocabulary just it doesn't really get there, because we talk about teams having a bad season. As, oh, it's a crisis, it's a disaster, it's all the cataclysm. Mm. But he's had like an honest to God, like proper health scare of the kind that completely transcends football. So I always find it only slightly weird and difficult to talk about it, because you have to completely shift gear in terms of how you use words.
Do you shift gear though? Because
he's gone through treatment for testicular cancer. Which is obviously a horrible, horrible thing. And it also just really, when these incredibly fit young men who like dedicate their lives to becoming prime physical specimens also get hit by terrible diseases like that, it scares the bejesus out of me, to be perfectly honest, to be a little bit selfish about it. So when you see stories like that, it's really unsettling, of course, for him and for his family that he's had to go through that. So seeing him be back for Juventus, for Borussia Dortmund, and scoring a hat-trick in a friendly last week against Basel.
Hat-trick?
Yeah. He's back.
He's back.
He's looking sharp and could even play this weekend, which is tremendous.
It's an amazing story.
It's a great human story for him. And again, shifting gear back to our usual sort of vocabulary of football, of hyperbole, of nonsense, it is also great for Dortmund in a way that kind of doesn't matter, but it does for the stuff that we're going to talk about in this pod.
Yeah, indeed. And well done. And from all of us, actually, we wish Sebastian Haller, obviously very well, former West Ham centre forward, amongst other things. So you will have to follow that with another good news story, Andy.
Maybe not quite to the same extent, but it's clear that you're no one if you didn't at least participate in a Super Coppa in Saudi Arabia this week. And
we
had the Milan Derby for the Italian version on Wednesday night. And correct me if I'm wrong, we spoke with Nikki in the first OTC of 2023. And she said the thing about Inter is they might not get everything won, but they can beat absolutely anyone on their day. And they did. They won 3-0. Federico De Marco, who's a childhood Inter fan, Inter product, scored the opener. Brilliant opener it was. They played really, really well. And I think the two things that I would take from this, firstly, the fact that, let's be honest, of course he's in a difficult spot at the moment, but Inter looked better without Lukaku. I think the Dzeko-Lautaro partnership is terrific, and they were really terrific in this. The other thing is, Milan aren't winning anymore at the moment. It was a poor performance. They exited the Coppa Italia recently. They've let Napoli take a big lead at the summit of Serie A, having started really convincingly with that first performance against Salernitana after Christmas. And they're not looking in great form to defend their Scudetto.
And also just minor point, but it's so fascinating to me watching that touch and finish from Lautaro Martinez for the third one, given that just a short while ago at the World Cup, like, he looked like he couldn't hit the water from an oil rig. Like, he was just so completely out of it. And just, he's had a little break now. And what a goal that was.
So can we recognise Dzeko as the Lautaro whisperer?
I don't know. But again, about Dzeko, I mean, for listeners who haven't seen the highlights yet, do check them out. Because that Dzeko goal, definitely rolling back the years territory, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not moving like a man his age on that goal there.
Big role in the DeMarco one as well. Yeah.
Let's stay with Serie A for our first conversation, which is about the return of Napoli. And what a way to return, by hammering one of the big guns of Serie A. Who wants to talk about this? Napoli versus Juve, arguably a match of different football philosophies in terms of coaching.
Not arguably, you're 100% right. It really is. And that's what made this, I think, so interesting from the start. But, you know, sometimes when you get these absolutely titanic clashes, the anticipation is such that they're always going to let you down. You know, there's no other way. And this didn't. This went above and beyond. It matched high expectations and totally surpassed them. Maybe not in terms of an actual struggle, or at least not much past half time. I think the first half there was some entertaining push and pull, but then second half Napoli just absolutely steamrolled them. And given that Juventus had only conceded 7 goals all season, to put 5 past them from Napoli's perspective is extraordinary. Because since they lost that first game back at Inter on Epiphany, we question them. Other people question them. And people were right to question them. You know, as Nikki was saying to us, they started last season absolutely brilliantly as well. But this has felt a little different. You know, they recomposed themselves by winning that game at Samp, which obviously Samp are one of the weaker teams in the division, but that was a game when they're playing at the Marassi in a very heavy atmosphere after the death of Gianluca Vialli, and Napoli did their job neatly and professionally. And then they came into this, and this was first 10 games of the season, Napoli, when they were mauling everyone, when they were mauling Liverpool. They were absolutely sensational in this. And obviously, so much focus will be on Victor Osimhen and Kvisha Kvaratskhelia, and quite rightly so, because they've been two of the best players, not just in Italy, but in Europe this season. They've been amazing. But I think, Lars, that the key to Napoli getting this done, that midfield is really something else. And when you bear in mind, at the start of the season, of all the big players they lose, and we know they lost Koulibaly, they lost Mertens, they lost Insigne, that's what made people doubt Napoli going into this season. But losing Fabian Ruiz, I felt was a big one, because he was a player who will get better, unlike those other ones that we've just mentioned, who've had brilliant, illustrious careers. But the fact that he was going was a sense...
Why was he so important?
Because he's someone who's been brilliant since he's got there, because he's a terrific passer of the ball, because he scores goals, because he sets the tempo in midfield. PSG came and got him for a reason. And the fact that Napoli couldn't tie him down to a new contract and they had to let him go, like they'd let Edinson Cavani go in the same direction, or Ezequiel Lavezzi back in the day, it was like a recognition of, yeah, we're not quite there. We're not quite at the summit. It felt like the real end of an era. But then, Lars, you look at that midfield, and Zambo Anguissa has been incredible since he's arrived there. Zielinski, I think, has been playing the best football of his career under Spalletti. And then you look at Stanislav Lobotka, yeah, who's been magnificent all season.
And this is the thing I was going to bring up, because Anguissa was good already last season, and Zielinski, you've seen flashes. He's not been as consistent as this season before, perhaps, but you've always known there's a player there. But Lobotka in that anchor role, he's been there for a couple of seasons just as a sort of a bit part player who's never really established himself. And he's gone in, and he's a former, he spent some time at Ajax when he was young, but he's a former Celta Vigo midfielder from Slovakia. And he's gone in, and he's one of these midfielders who you couldn't plug him into any midfield anywhere and he'd work. But he has a very specific role in this team, which is just to keep the ball moving, just keep it ticking. Like, he moves it beautifully, and he hardly ever misplaces a pass. And nothing special, nothing fancy, but he just keeps it moving. And it's such a key part of the sort of flowing nature of Napoli's football, that you have a guy at the base of midfield who can just effortlessly and casually keep the ball moving with a great feel for the tempo and with a lot of precision. Very, very impressive. And I think the losing of the big guys as well, that's one thing. You lose the heroes, you know, Dries Mertens, the adopted son, you know, big Koulibaly in defence. You know, these are big gaps. But it's also the fact that some of the guys that were brought in the summer were not that impressive on paper. And now that's obviously been proven to be very stupid. I mean, Min-jae's defense has been tremendous. Obviously, Kvaratskhelia is the sort of breakout talent of European football. But I think a lot of the unease going into the season was the fact that, listen, our big guys are gone, and we replaced them with these dudes who we've never heard of. And in addition to that really working out very surprisingly well, I think one of the things that gives me a little bit of confidence in Napoli going forward is that they've got a squad there. Like, if it's not just the first 11. Yeah. There's real strength. Just looking in this game, I mean, we've seen when Osimhen was out, young Cholito Simeone was scoring goals and was being useful. Raspadori's knocking around there. He's a very useful player. Like Chucky Luzano, you forget about. He's a super talented wide player. Can be inconsistent, but can be do really good things.
I'm
like,
glad you mentioned these guys, because I thought you're getting
a lot of strength.
I thought you're getting high off the Tanguy and Ndombele highlight reel against Cremonese in the Coppa earlier.
Yeah,
in the week.
Which is the one when they
nice
lost.
As that was.
Yeah, I mean that's Ndombele in a nutshell, isn't it? The highlight reel was good, but the team lost. I mean,
well, the the real moment for Napoli in this season was losing to Inter, wasn't it? And that was the point where you thought that they might come off the rails slightly, but they seem to have regrouped. And I wonder whether it was a different Napoli that faced Juve, or whether we should look at the difference in tactics. Yeah.
It was totally different, because they just had a real off day, I think, at Inter, because, like we said at the time, didn't we? They just didn't create anything. And that felt like a shock, to see this Napoli team that's been so adventurous this season, so Spalletti-ish, so front foot, look just so bereft of ideas. But, you know, that can happen, I think, with a break of rhythm. And it doesn't look like a swallow's going to make a summer in this case. What I think is interesting, though, particularly when we talk about that style of Spalletti, the fact that facing Juventus, without getting too sanctimonious about it, it does feel a little bit like a fight for the soul of football. Not because of the off-field stuff so much, although that is part of it, obviously. I think it's the fact that, you know, Spalletti, him and Allegri are just such diametric opposites. And you think about, you know, they're both from Tuscany, so they're both like a sharp retort, it's fair to say.
Is that a Tuscan thing? I didn't know.
Apparently so. Okay. And before the game, when Spalletti, knowing what pressure his team were under, knowing that people were thinking they would hit the Juventus brick wall, he said, well, look, we're two opposed philosophies of football. They say, Allegri says that winning's not the most important thing, it's the only thing. Here at Napoli, it's different. It's about heart and soul. We had Maradona here. It's about a dream. And you think, wow, that is a lot to put out there. And then they go out there and play like that.
And they win, yeah.
So I think it's about the style as much as the result. Without getting too over the top on this, like I said, given that it makes me think a little bit of Italy winning the Euro 2020, because there's still this sense, and it's a sense peddled by Allegri, and it's a sense that's been growing in recent weeks, even if Serie A is much more open than it used to be, much more attacking football than it used to be. There was that feeling of the pursuer catching up, and like Juventus are going to grind everyone down. Mm-hmm. Whereas now, I think it's a beautiful thing. If the teams who haven't got the most money, who can't do whatever they want in the transfer market, the idea of Napoli and Arsenal with a particular philosophy, building things in a particular way, playing a certain type of football, go and win two European leagues in the same season when they're not owned by states, I think that's quite interesting.
And it does feel like a big difference. I mean, the natural thing is to look back on previous Napoli campaigns that have almost been successful when they've gotten there under Sarri, for instance. And this aspect, I'm repeating myself a little bit, but this aspect of the fact that they have a squad feels like a big difference. Mm. I think with that Sarri team, the depth wasn't quite the same, and you were kind of relying on your main guys to do the thing. And listen, don't get me wrong, obviously this team is all about Kvaratskhelia, it's all about Osimhen, but you've got a toolbox there for Spalletti to turn to from these guys who are just reeled off on the bench. You've got, like, if it's not quite happening for them, you have a bunch of guys you can turn to who can add something a little bit different.
And they have stood up this season when called upon.
Really impressive amount of depth for them to have assembled, especially given that Aurelio De Laurentiis has so often been accused of being a bit stingy and a bit cheap. I think this move last summer of letting some really high earners go and using some of that financial wiggle room to assemble a squad and adding some depth, I mean, that's obviously looking like a masterstroke now, especially because some of the outside-of-the-box signings have really worked.
And if Napoli do win it, if they do go and win it, despite all the competition and the chase that's on, where does that leave the philosophy of Italian football then? It leaves it with Spalletti, surely, that it's about
I think it
much
already is, though.
More.
I think it already is, because, like I said, you look at the way that Italy played in Euro 2020 and the way Mancini wanted his team to play.
But that was about winning, wasn't it?
No, it was great for all of football. I think the openness with which they played, the bravery with which they played, it felt like something that reflected Serie A, I thought. And you know, that's always going to be the case, you could argue, with teams like England and Italy, where most of the players play at home, that it's going to reflect the characteristics of the native league. But I thought the way that Italy played. It really gripped the imagination. Obviously, there'll be England fans listening to this going, well, look, I wanted to win Euro 2020. Yeah, fine. But I think globally, the way that Italy won a tournament in a way that a tournament had not been won by an international team for a while, in a way that a Euros or a World Cup had not been won for a while, was a positive thing. This wasn't Greece in 2004. It wasn't Portugal in 2016.
Sure, but where does all this leave Allegri then? Because he's the old school. He's saying football is about winning. Where does it leave him if Serie A has moved on from that?
Well, I think it's clear that there's still a place for different philosophies. And we've seen that with the success that Juventus have had over the last little while. And, you know, Allegri has always maintained that, look, I'm just holding the fort until Chiesa, who they've been very careful with as he comes back from injury, and Pogba come back. And, you know, the second half of the season is going to be a different season. But this was like, okay, well, like, you've got your plan, but maybe it won't quite be enough. Which, like I said, for a neutral is a reasonably positive thing, I think it's fair to say.
Also, okay. I think just being as dour as they are, like, unless you're winning, it's absolutely no fun. Like, it's like, if you're top of the league, you know, and you're winning the league, and you can go along with it. But it's just such an uninspiring, like, they've scored 27 goals so far this season. Like, it's not very impressive, I think.
But if this is a transition back to Allegrismo, I suppose you would call it, then if they finish second or third, that would be, I think, quite an acceptable season for Juventus.
Getting back in the Champions League, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But it will be so much judged against the background. It's not really what Allegri does. It will be judged against the background of what happens with the current accounting allegations and where that leads them.
Yeah, so you don't really know the state of the club. I mean, a mighty four goals more than Salernitana in 16th. Right. Well done, Juventus. Very impressive
I'm
stuff.
I'm glad you brought us on to Salernitana because we've got a question here on Instagram, and you can get in contact with us anytime during the course of the week at Football Ramble, at Dotton, Addy Bio, at Andy Brassel, and at Lars Severston. What is going on at Salernitana?
Well, champion shoe thrower David Nicola was fired as coach on Monday. They were beaten 8-2 at the weekend.
Do you want to explain the shoe throwing bit? I thought that was only Iraqis when George W. Bush is there.
Well, he got so annoyed with his players last year that he threw a sneaker on the pitch during the game.
You've been watching too much of that. Basketball.
It's very much a future sort of quiz question. What does George W. Bush and the Salernitana players have in common? People hurl shoes at them in frustration.
Yeah, I think it could be. So at the weekend they were beaten 8-2 Atalanta. That was considered a little too much. They removed him on Monday and reappointed him on Wednesday.
Oh.
Now, of course, like, reappointing the old coach is not such an unusual thing in Italy. And maybe that's something that will happen more in the football world as we go forward. Because, of course, the way that it happens now, if a coach is fired, who said anything about it working? It's all about temporary relief. That's all football's ever about. Yeah. But I mean, what tends to happen these days is when coaches get fired, rather than getting a severance pay or the rest of their contract paid off, they are paid continuously until they get a new job. Hence why Schalke, for example, have been in the position of paying four coaches over the last little while. But so in Italy, they've taken that to and beyond its logical conclusion by coach one gets fired, it's replaced by coach two. After they get sick of coach two and he gets fired, coach one comes back because he's still on the payroll, basically. It's the cheapest possible option. But in this case, obviously, it was a far accelerated version of that process. And I think with Davide Nicola, he's just a silver-tongued devil. And he said he talked his president round. In verticale la palla per Politano che la gira di prima dentro deviazione e poi Kvaratskhelia! Osimhen la butta in porta 1-0 1-0 Napoli.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Well, I suppose if Australia can be part of the Eurovision Song Contest, there's no reason why we should raise an eyebrow when the Supercoppa is played in Saudi Arabia. Real Madrid versus Barcelona. Barcelona win it 3-1. And Jack has asked us on social media, how significant was this victory for Barcelona? Who wants to go? Lush?
I think it was a little bit significant because it's easy to scoff at these sort of... these super cups. I'm trying to find a sufficiently insulting but not problematic way of describing them. I mean, it is. It's already
a Norwegian wood.
It's just already a slightly irrelevant tournament that you've made further irrelevant by selling it off to the highest bidder. Like, it's a profoundly soulless exercise, right? But every time Real Madrid and Barcelona play each other, it's in a semi-competitive game at least. You know, something's on the line. They do get to lift a shiny bucket at the end of it. And there's something about the context here.
It's a bouquet, by the way.
There is something about the context here, which is that we've had the World Cup break. We're all just kind of wondering a little bit, like, what are the teams going to be like when they come back from it? All this sort of thing. You know, where are we in relation to each other? Barcelona team being very much a work in progress, all this sort of stuff. So when you get a game and a result that's as one-sided as this, I think it does give it a bit of a significance because Barcelona were so much better that I know it's just one game and it's a long season still. But they are just 3 points behind Real Madrid, so anything can happen. They're Real Madrid at the end of the day. But man, Barcelona looked a lot better here.
Yeah, they did. And I think you look at the midfield in particular, the performances of Gavi and Pedri were outstanding. And I think it really underlined that slightly moving away from 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1 that Xavi's installed is working pretty well. And I think you saw the joy with which they celebrated it. I think that was quite significant as well. Yeah, and a sense of like, actually, maybe we can win La Liga against these monsters who never lose. And Lars is right. I think it looked as if you weren't aware of the two teams, you would feel there was a class gap on watching this. If you weren't
really
aware of the teams
way,
and the players. It did. I think so. And then you had on the Monday, various parts of the Madrid press sort of pining for Casemiro, going, that's the guy you need to win finals.
Yes,
rather than just, it's one match and we were second best. Just like if you think of Ancelotti being under pressure before for losing the Clásico 4-0 at home to Xavi's Barcelona when I think it was either the first or second Clásico they played.
Also, like, just as good as Casemiro is and has been for United, I have to confess, I did not watch this game thinking, you know what, Real Madrid need another old guy in midfield. That's exactly what the situation calls for. Like, that was not my impression, I have to say.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? That sense of you need experienced players to win big trophies. I think there's a question of interpretation here, because is this really a big trophy? Or does it just feel significant because it's these two and there's a trophy
at stake? It's hardly even a trophy. It's fully irrelevant. But
that's irrelevant. Just
because of the fact that it's Real Madrid versus Barcelona, and it's a Barcelona team that's in a process of evolution, exactly, that has a few young players who are finding their feet, a young coach who's still finding his feet. So when they have a game against their arch rivals where they're this superior, obviously that does mean a little bit. And
That's what puts coaches under pressure, isn't it? Not just losing, but losing in the way that you've lost.
Well, yeah, it makes you think a little bit. I think there are mitigating circumstances here for Real Madrid. Aurelien Tchouaméni not being there, I think, matters quite a lot.
It's huge.
I think Camavinga obviously has a lot of talent, but he couldn't quite get into this game. And I do wonder, listen, most games in La Liga, it's going to be perfectly fine, but you do wonder that against the very, very best opponents, can you still do a midfield with both Kroos and Modric in there? Is that still something that's workable? Especially if Tchouaméni's not in there to do a bit of extra running. Some of these questions are there. And also, you know, Real Madrid had the weirdest season last year, because they very, very rarely looked that convincing, but they ended up winning the Champions League and La Liga, right? So that's kind of good. And so much of that was Benzema having an amazing year and Vinicius Jr. having a breakout year. And the rest of the team just doing the basics. It seems like it really damning them with faint praise, but I felt a lot of the games I watched, it felt like that was what was going on. Now, in this game, Benzema wasn't at his sharpest, I think it's fair to say, and Vinicius Jr. was very ineffective by his standards, and you had a midfield getting overrun by a sort of much sharper, more, you know, aggressive and just quicker looking Barcelona team. It was a bit of a mess.
It's funny, during January particularly, I think it's fine to be bored by transfer sagas, but if we are at the beginning of the Jude Bellingham transfer saga, I think it's genuinely interesting. The idea that Real Madrid and Liverpool are kind of neck and neck in terms of both trying to get him. It doesn't seem like he's given any even indications of where he might prefer yet. I think he has a huge bearing on how the next 3 or 4 years probably goes in Champions League circles. I think Bellingham makes that much of a difference. I mean, you would feel if Bellingham arrived at Real Madrid, that would lock it up in terms of their midfield. Mm-hmm. If you talk about, like, you know, needing to move on, if you imagine Tchouaméni, Bellingham, a slightly more mature Camavinga, and some of his difficulties, I would argue, have not really been of his making. Like, I think he played like left back during the World Cup final.
That was weird.
Having had a difficult time there earlier in the tournament and made a pretty good job of it. So I think it's really interesting to see how that's going to go. I think the thing is, because it's Ancelotti at the helm, and because he's considered, in his own way, not in the same way as Allegri, but almost in his chameleon-like qualities as a sort of pragmatist, he's not an idealist like Xavi. Mm. Whereas Xavi, it's easier to feel the wind of change, because he's like, come up here on the roof, feel the wind. Whereas Ancelotti's not like that at all. It's very different.
And there's also something about how they're not really, and haven't been for a very long time, Real Madrid, a team with a very clearly defined system. It's not really about the collective in the same way that it is for other top European teams.
Will meet the required standard because they're great
individuals. Yeah, they'll do the basics properly, we'll defend properly, we'll dominate possession because we've got absolute geniuses in midfield and we got a couple of guys up front who are going to score a goal at some point. Mm. Like, that's kind of been the vibe, right? And when that's the case, when individuals aren't quite at it, then it looks very bad, like when there's not a collective system to fall back on.
Of course, Barcelona have got their problems as well, because although they've gone 9 games unbeaten now in all competitions, they're still a selling club. They're still going to have to sell, aren't they?
Yeah, and particularly because they didn't make the last 16 in the Champions League for the second successive year.
Lol.
It was interesting seeing Joan Laporta, the president, go to La Liga and say, we need you to augment our salary ceiling, our salary cap by 15% this January. And obviously, one's immediately normal reaction was the bloody brass balls of this guy. It's outrageous. His reasoning was, we didn't sign up for the CVC hedge fund deal, so everyone else has like had a bit of a capital influx, but we haven't. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. It was your decision not to sign for it. So anyway, that they were always going to be in this situation, and they're kind of obfuscating a little bit with saying, can we have 15% more salary cap? Can we talk about the Super League again? It's like, why can't you just manage things properly? That would be better. Because basically what they're going to have to do is sell someone pretty big this January, if they can possibly do it. But it is tough for them because, of course, they look like, of course, Rafinha has been mentioned since Arsenal didn't complete the Mihailo Mudrik signing. Arsenal have been linked with Rafinha. Rafinha came out and very clearly said after the Supercopa, it's great to win a trophy with Barcelona. I hope to win many more, which is his way of saying,
good luck. Good luck getting rid of me, fellas.
Sell me if you can. Yeah. So it's Frankie de Jong all over again. So here they are, moving around the margins, trying to get off 5 months of paying Memphis Depay.
With the great irony being that I thought one of the things that really worked in this game was adding Frankie de Jong to the midfield and actually pushing Gavi into a slightly more attacking role, having de Jong next to Busquets with Pedri buzzing around.
But his quality was never actually in question.
They've found a way, because obviously if you're going to do the classic Barcelona 4-3-3 and you're still going to have old man Busquets at the anchor because, you know, he's hard to replace, and you've got Pedri and Gavi as the two eights, there's no obvious place for Frankie de Jong. So you think, okay, maybe we cash in on him. But this little change in formation that seems to find a way of accommodating de Jong that really, really worked against Real Madrid, looked fantastic.
This question,
ironically, now they want to move him on because they need the money. It's weird.
This question, and going back to that little dig that you had about Barcelona and what they can do about Memphis Depay, Andy. This question from the fake buzz on Instagram is Memphis to Atleti. It's a rumour. Talk of Joselu to Barca. Are they okay over in Spain?
Well, no one's really got the capacity to spend a lot of money in January. The Memphis to Atleti thing, that is happening, by the way. I find the relationship between Barca and Atletico really interesting at the moment, because Atleti have been almost as poorly managed as Barcelona over the last couple of years. And because Barcelona are higher profile, it sort of covered them. And now the two clubs, they have this interesting relationship where they're using each other. They're like two drunks at a bar holding each other up, basically. And so Memphis to Atleti is needed for Atleti because they've let Joao Felix go and they're running out of forwards. Barcelona need it because they could do with getting Memphis's wages off the wage bill. Within that deal, it was originally talked of as a possible swap with Yannick Carrasco going to Barcelona. Now, he's one of Simeone's key guys, so he's not going this January, but it seems he'll have a year left on his contract at the end of the season. Barcelona have negotiated a preferential option to sign him for not a horrendous amount of money in the summer, which, again, might pave the way for a Rafinha to go or a couple more forward players to go. Joselu to Barcelona, I would like this, obviously. It would be great for the first 2 weeks, pretty much like Martin Brathwaite going to Barcelona. This is really a deal they don't need. But obviously, if you're Joselu, you would 100% take it, wouldn't you?
So, if you've got a problem and there's a goalkeeper and a rocket scientist available, who are you going to call, Osh?
None of them. There are very few problems I have in my life that I think either a goalkeeper or a rocket scientist can call.
It wasn't the answer I was hoping for. Andy, bail me out. Who are you going to call?
Oh, the goalkeeper, definitely.
Depends on the goalkeeper.
If
I'm Bayern, I'm taking the goalkeeper, definitely.
Indeed, we're talking about Bayern now because they've got a goalkeeper, or they're bringing in a goalkeeper now to fill in the enormous shoes of their previous goalkeeper, Manuel Neuer.
I'm thinking I can call him and give him some helpful tips on how to recover from a broken leg.
That's what I was hoping you'd do. Yeah. You are the official Ghostbuster in this. But why on earth are Bayern so desperate for a replacement for Manuel Neuer?
Because Manuel Neuer is bad at skis.
Well, yeah, there is that, but I guess there are two ways of looking at it, and that's before we get past the ethics of going on a little skiing jaunt to get over your World Cup heartbreak.
There used to be contract clauses against this. The footballers used to have that. Yeah. That was a big deal in Norway because a lot of the players who went to England were like, "Wait, what? I can't ski in my holidays? What's wrong with you people?
You certainly can't ride a motorcycle."
Do you never remember Stefan Schwarz, the guy at Sunderland who wasn't allowed to go to space?
Yeah, there's been
loads of, like, they had an anti-space. He wasn't, that was in his contract. No space for you.
And like Sunderland's pretty far north, so how Sunderland put that clause in there, it's extraordinary.
Which of the Bayern players do you think would go to space?
I keep trying this joke. Nobody's interested. I'll give it up. Sorry,
I think Thomas Müller would be a good astronaut.
What about Bayern? Emmanuel Neuer has injured himself on the ski slope, but they're desperate. They're desperate to have replacement.
Yeah, because there is such a huge gap between Neuer and the second choice, Sven Ulreich, who's great to fill in for a couple of games. But Neuer is out for the rest of the season and perhaps a little bit longer. This rod that's in his leg will probably never leave his leg because it's quite a bad break.
It'll bother him in the winter, by the way.
Is that right?
One sympathises. I've got two rods.
Lucky it's nice and warm in Bavarian winters. Anyway, the thing is... Not only is there a big drop-off between Neuer and Ulreich, Neuer is a very particular type of goalkeeper. We know you have goalkeepers who stay at home and ones who are a bit more adventurous, but Neuer is beyond adventurous, isn't he? You know, he's something a little bit more than that.
He thinks he's an outfield player.
He's also, until he hit a really bad run of form, which coincided with the World Cup, still one of the best goalkeepers in the world at 35. So they needed a proper replacement. Now, they did consider bringing back Alex Neubel, who's in the second season of a two-season loan from Monaco. I think that would have been a poor choice. And it was communicated this week that he definitely would be staying at Monaco to see out the end of that loan. I just don't think he's as good as some other people think he is. And he's been a little bit up and down in Monaco. Largely good, but nothing that would suggest he's an adequate Manuel Neuer replacement. And so they go and get the best other goalkeeper in the Bundesliga, Jan Sommer, who some would say is actually better than Neuer. I think that's a debate for another place.
He's a goal stopper, though. When it comes to penalties, he's
Sommer is a great shot stopper. He's incredible.
A very, very big shout. I mean, better than Neuer, Jan Sommer?
I think as a shot stopper, you could argue that. I think I'm not saying he's definitely better than Neuer, but it's a discussion. It's not something that you can completely rule out. He's more than competent with his feet as well. He's a bit younger than Neuer. I think the interesting thing is here, because this deal will end up happening because Borussia Mönchengladbach have got their replacement. You get rid of one Swiss goalkeeper, you're going to sign another. They're bringing in Jonas Omlin from Montpellier. So, Sommer is interesting because they are going for a goalkeeper who is certainly competition for Neuer. And he's 35 now. He's going to be challenged at club and country level. Given how great Neuer has been in the last 4 years since he was last really challenged by Ter Stegen at national level, it's happened at a really bad time for him.
Yeah, Sommer getting in, they would have to make some sort of deal with him that... when the big dog is back, we'll have to look at it and see what happens. But that's interesting. I also just think...
That's a Hank Williams song, by the way, when the big dog is back. Generally.
But it means that Bayern have got a lot of stuff on their plate because they've got a new goalkeeper. They've got a lot of injuries at the back at the moment as they prepare to restart the Bundesliga with this game at Leipzig on Friday. They've only got, I think, 5 fit defenders at the moment, one of whom is Daley Blind, who they've just brought in, surprisingly, on a free transfer from Ajax. Mane's still not fit. And the aforementioned Thomas Müller, well, you talked about him being a potential spaceman. he certainly wasn't in this global orbit for the World Cup, was he?
No, he wasn't. I mean, it's an annual thing, isn't it, that we sit here in January. I've done this a few times now. We sit here and try to convince ourselves that there are reasons why Bayern might not win the league. That's what we kind of do. And there are some, there's some fragility there. Add to the injury situation at the back, just also that, like Matthias de Ligt hasn't been great after coming in. I think hasn't fully convinced. So there's some question marks there.
No Luca Hernandez after what happened to him during the World Cup.
He's twanged himself. And yeah. I quite like the Daily Blind transfer, to be honest. I think most games in the Bundesliga, he's so tidy on the ball and he's so clever as a player that he will kind of keep things taking over for them in the build-up and all that. But it gives me an opportunity to bring out my favorite saying. It's that time of the year again. You don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the other campers. You don't. It's true. You don't have to outrun the tiger. You just have to
We're
outrun
back
the,
on
the
cross country skiing again.
The other zookeepers.
We're certainly back on the countries in the north where there are bears.
You don't have to outrun the polar bear. You just have to outrun the old other explorers in your party. Have to outswim the shark. You just have to outswim your sister. Go on, Emily. But the point about it is, if we're talking about who's winning the Bundesliga, it's not so much a Bayern Munich discussion. It's a discussion of who's catching them.
It's not really I don't think that's really the question. I think the projection is forward to the PSG tie in the Champions League, which is less than a month away now. And you've got to say, a Bayern in a position to win the Champions League, I would feel more confident with Sommer between the sticks than them trying to bumble through with Ulreich or Nubel or whoever else. But you've got to ask, how fit is Mané going to be?
Mm-hmm.
Is Müller going to find his form? I think you're right. In terms of winning the Bundesliga, I don't think anyone's good enough to take advantage of any difficulties they might have. The question is, the next 3 weeks, as a tune-up, for playing against PSG, I think is interesting. It feels to me like PSG are favourites in that tie at the moment.
Look, it was Julian Nagelsmann that inspired this section of the conversation because his comments on signing Sommer, the deal hasn't gone through yet, but nevertheless, integrating a new goalkeeper is not rocket science. Usually takes about 15 minutes. Having said that, in November, he said he had probably the most turbulent half year of his professional life. Let's leave that for now, because we've come to the end of our conversation, excepting for the moment when you both suggest a game of the week for us to feast our minds on over the weekend. Andy, do you fancy going first on this?
I'm going to go Dutch on Sunday, 1:30, and you can see it for free in the UK, is at Feyenoord versus Ajax. A big game anyway, but Ajax, I think, all over the place, on and off the field at the moment.
You can understand why, can't you?
Dropped more points last weekend. And Feyenoord have taken advantage. Ajax really need to go there and get some points at the moment. And, you know, with PSV spluttering as well, there's a genuine possibility that Feyenoord could go on and take the title this year. And if they beat Ajax, it's a huge step forward to doing it. Now, I think to replicate the Dutch stadium experience, what you should do for the food, make yourself a hot dog, put it in a drawer in your house.
Mm-hmm. For how long?
Maybe half
Several
hour.
Several months. Okay.
And then, just before kickoff, go and open that drawer, take the hot dog out and eat it while you're watching the game.
With some cheese that tastes like cardboard.
It's up to you. Condiments are a personal choice.
Thank you. And Lars?
That's true. Condiments are a personal choice. I think since you didn't say it, I mean, obviously the answer here is it's RB Leipzig versus Bayern Munich on Friday night. That is really my game of the week. If you are a casual fan of European football and you're watching one game this weekend, that for me has to be it, because you are still hoping, as much as we've totally dismissed the notion of Bayern not winning the league, the gap isn't that huge. And there are some, I'm not going to do the thing that we always do of pretending it's going to happen, but you know, maybe if Leipzig can get a win there, you know, who knows. But I want to cheat and I want to flag up my sort of slightly more interesting game of the week, maybe. Is Saturday night Sevilla play Cadiz in what is a massive relegation six-pointer in La Liga, which is a weird thing to say out loud, because Sevilla should not be involved in a relegation six-pointer, given that it's not that long ago we were talking seriously about how they could have a title run last season. But, you know, this is where we are. They've completely collapsed. Lost against Girona last weekend. It did get a win against Alaves in the Copa del Rey this week. That was important. But even so, the situation is not good. Suggestions that that's Jorge Sampaoli might not be long in the job, that he might quit. Things are just not going well. And yeah, if they were to not get a result against Cadiz, that would obviously be a significant disaster for them and Sevilla in real trouble. Food pairing-wise, do you know what? There's an annual tuna festival in Cadiz.
Did you not know?
As a fan of a good tuna steak, a well-cooked tuna steak, it's really challenging to cook them because you have to have them in the pan for like not very long.
Yeah. You've got to have a real tuna rather than something you get out of a can, by the way.
Obviously, good God.
It's a fine line. It's the duck of the fish world, isn't it? It's very...
But duck, you have to cook for quite a while. The thing about the tuna steak is that it's very, like, you have to very... Anyway, there is a tuna festival. I'd say go get yourself a proper fresh tuna steak from your local fishmonger and see if you can cook it right.
Norwegian
like
promotes fresh fish. Sorry for the cliches, people.
In the pan, you've got to be very careful.
I'm not going to quote the Beatles one more time, but I will quote Lord Byron.
Tuna's tremendous.
Lord Byron said, Seville... In all of Spain, there is no city more pretty. Cadiz, perhaps. Don Juan.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.